The time.
Look at the time. It is Hutton O'Clock. Noon on a Wednesday, so it is Hutton O'Clock. Caroline Willie D. Mays, 1025-1063, the game in the Game Nashville app. The Titans have been active in free agency and, as of last Friday, active in the trade market as well. Titans trade a 2025 third and swap sevenths with the Kansas City Chiefs in the 2024 draft for cornerback L'Jarius Sneed. Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow, joins us now. Hutton, your initial impression of when the Titans made that trade and the player that they're getting in L'Jarius Sneed?
Well, the initial impression, they get a considerable upgrade at the position compared to what they had last year, and how they've done this through free agency and through the trade. And, I mean, first glance, when I'm reading Schefter's post, whatever we want to call it now.
It's a tweet.
Thank you. Thank you, Caroline. With your permission, I'll call it a tweet in Twitter.
Perfect.
I did a double take on the compensation. I wanted to make sure it said 2025 on the pick. And, of course, we know the third round had to be next year. And then, you know, the swap of seventh rounders. I was surprised on the compensation, given the fact that Chris Jones played under the tag last year, and then they worked out a one-year agreement with him prior to one game in. I figured it would be something similar if they didn't get the right compensation back. The Chiefs ultimately trade him, and the Titans get an upgrade and a young player that is going into his prime. I think that's key, what they've done with Ridley and with Sneed now. Through free agency and through a trade, they've got younger players that are under contract that pair up well with Levis's deal. If Levis can pan out, you know, this is the contracts really, they level out with the quarterback as long as the quarterback holds up his end of the bargain.
Willie and I were having this debate yesterday because Willie said, look, this is a rebuild year for the Titans. 6-7 wins, I think, is fair to expect. I said, yeah. Look, moves like Calvin Ridley and trading for L'Jarius Sneed and Chidobe Awuzie, like, those aren't rebuild kind of moves. Those are, we want to be a good team this year. What's your take on the moves that the Titans have made and also like, kind of what that means in terms of what they want to accomplish this season?
I still think they're another offseason. This is part of the foundation that they're building with the vision in mind for what they're doing offensively. What they want to do through the draft. But also keep in mind, Caroline, they don't have a lot of pieces in the draft right now. Mm-hmm. They can trade down and get that, but nothing's guaranteed with how the draft falls. So where do they want to add through free agency and get guys under contract versus what they want to do through the draft? And that's ultimately how the rebuild will go, building through the draft and with younger players under contract, rookie contracts. They need another offseason like this one to fully get the jet fuel, so to speak. And there are plenty of holes on the roster that are left unanswered. They've got to do something on the defensive line. And we know that they need another safety. They certainly offensively need another young wide receiver. And it goes without saying at left tackle. There are pieces that they have to go find to this puzzle. I like the foundational pieces that they've done, though. The guys, the three main ones being with Ridley, with Sneed now through the trade, and Awuzie, those guys will be the centerpieces for what they're going to draft with. And the way it's set up and the way they're spending money, you can kind of see the transition from backfield to passing game and on defense. The transition from big money at safety to spending on the outside and then up front, they've got to add someone next to Big Jeff, but Simmons is getting paid and rightfully so too.
We're talking with Jonathan Hutton, Outkick, discussing the Tennessee Titans and the many things they can do in regards to the draft, free agency or whatnot. Now, Caroline did bring up the question that we sort of went back and forth, where it was really her and Willie went back and forth. Is this a rebuild? Going forward? But based upon the moves that they did make, like Caroline said, it does seem like, okay, we don't want to be classified as a rebuild, but maybe we don't want to be classified as a going forward. What would be sufficient enough for Titan fans this season record-wise? Is it 8 wins? Is it 9 wins? Or is it 10 wins? Because I think it's going to take at least 11 or 12 to win this division based upon the quarterbacks that are in this division now.
Well, I mean, Mace, you know how difficult it is to answer that question right now.
Exactly.
And Caroline does too. I don't see a version of the Houston Texans with this team currently. And here's why. There are so many unanswered questions to going into the offseason. And I need to see what they do in the draft. Mm-hmm. Presumably, rookie left tackle, playing next to Skoronski. I don't hate that, especially if it's Joe Alt. All of this centers around two key factors. Number one, we don't know about Callahan. We think we know. I presume benefit of the doubt, and they've hired well, but he's going to be calling plays for the first time as a first-time head coach. That's not easy to do. It's not just snap. Now, it's a trend in the league that you're hiring a guy to do that, going through the McVay tree. A lot of the branches have done that, even with LaFleur when he was here with Vrabel. Okay, let's just presume that that's going to go fine. Nothing is smooth, but fine. And then there's Levis. There's a huge piece to this with Will Levis. We saw flashes of that last year. Now he's going into a different offense, albeit one that should be quarterback friendly and where they're going to develop him behind the scenes even better. Great. But the pieces along the way, they need another young wide receiver. I don't even think about Treylon Burks right now. I should, but I don't. And we know up front of the defensive line, they've got to have other pieces there. Offensively, tight end comes to mind. You know, there are still openings across the roster that they haven't solved, and they're not going to win at that high of a rate without doing so. And that's just being a part of the NFL. And they can't do that over one off season. This is not going into the off season looking at this roster. It was not a quick fix. The depth, consider where we're talking about on the depth of this team, mm-hmm. The depth and just the NFL, true NFL roster depth. This team was one of the worst last year, and 1 through 53, they haven't done enough to improve that part of the issue that I had with the team over the last couple of years. That's really how you win 9 or 10 games. Mm-hmm. And while Ridley is, you know, can be a fantastic player, same with Snead, you know, they're playing on teams that had been built over the last couple of seasons instead of one big offseason. There are pieces to that, but I don't think it's one quick fix, one regime change, and a team with 7 picks, 3 of them in the 7th round, and think that everything is just going to be great. I think from a fan perspective, you're going to want to win in the fall. Mm-hmm. But I'm a believer of it's not if you lose, it's how you lose. And Amy Adams-Strunk doesn't want to lose. She's spending the money. They had the capital to do it. I'm glad we're seeing that. I'm glad we're seeing them this aggressive. But I don't think that automatically means 10 wins in the division change mm-hmm. At the top for them. I think this is doesn't have to be a long process, but it is a process. And I'm trying to remind myself of that, too, based on the players that they acquire.
Yeah, you're right about that because, listen, it took them some years to get in this situation, so it's going to take them a few years to sort of get out of this situation, meaning building up your depth. They were not able to do that because of the lack of hits in your draft. And that's neither here nor there, but it's going to take them a few years to sort of build up that cupboard again. But you mentioned Treylon Burks, and I've heard everybody mention Treylon Burks. Like, listen, we're not thinking about him, but if he comes on, great. I think you have to, from this standpoint, from what you just said, Hutt, this team doesn't have much depth. So they're going to have to count on a Treylon Burks to finally realize the potential or make do on the potential that he has. They're going to have to rely on a Peter Skoronski to play up to, you know, the position he was drafted. Whoever they draft this year, they're going to have to expect him to come on and be an impact player. Why? Because the depth is not there. And if you don't have depth, then, yes, you got to count on these guys that maybe – especially Treylon. Maybe after 3 years on another team that has depth, you can say, well, if he comes on, great. If he doesn't, then we got enough depth. We'll be fine. But with the Titans, you don't have that depth. So you're going to have to count on a Treylon Burks to come on this season. I think if Treylon comes on, whoever they draft this season, this offseason, whether it's the left tackle or anybody else, and Peter Skoronski and a quarterback. If those three or four guys play up to their level, then to me, this is a 10-win team.
Good. Well, okay. You know, we were hearing from Carthon and the presser right after they fired Vrabel, where he's mentioning how many one-possession games they lost, right? The 7-point games or whatever they threw out there. That's typical for the league. Even bad teams are playing close games. And the Titans were a bad team. Let's not get that twisted. But, Mace, when it comes to Treylon Burks, it's
now on – And that's just
a
question in regards to Treylon. Like, he needs to –
Oh, I know that. Yeah. No doubt. I mean, they have to count on the fact that he's a part of – he's a piece. But right now, I can't count on the fact that the guy's going to be on the field. Now, it's not – I'm not saying that all on Burks. That a concussion is – that's – I set that aside. Like, I take that seriously, you know? But the other, the knee and everything else, a lot of times that just goes along a guy's career. I mean, we just kind of see he's known as right now. That's kind of the narrative I have for him. He's in the training room quite a bit. So I don't know. That's why he's out of sight, out of mind to me. But when he does play, he's got to be consistent. Now, there were games, week one comes to mind, where he's not getting the ball thrown his way. Hopkins is getting 13 or 15 targets, whatever it was, in against New Orleans. All of that to say, he's got to be a piece. I don't know where he is in the hierarchy, though, because at this time last year, Treylon Burks was the number one receiver on this roster. They didn't have Hopkins yet, and we're looking at this going into the draft thinking they're going to load up at receiver, and then they draft Tajay Spears, and they're laughing at the camera during the draft. So, like, Carthon was in that room, too, enough to where they counted on him then. So they have to be at least in a positive mindset with him, because last year at this time, that's how they were treating it. But it's on Burks to take over in a mindset of this is a reset, not just for me, but for this offense. It's a pass-happy offense, and Hopkins is even going on the record – talking to receivers in Cincinnati. This should be a transformational offseason for Treylon Burks if he takes it seriously and is a pro behind the scenes, because he has the ability. We saw this at Arkansas when he was drafted 16th overall and AJ Brown was traded. The thought was, okay, this is the best option to come in and be a version of what AJ Brown was. And it's been anything but that. But it doesn't mean he can't do it. I just haven't seen it, and seeing is believing for me now instead of just what the potential is because of where he is contractually and the whole fifth-year option and everything else that comes up. This is a big season and a big offseason for him. And last offseason, while we didn't have the same headlines, Mace, with him, the assumption was, man, they're really going into a year with Treylon Burks as their number one. Things must be looking on the up. And then by week one, we didn't see him get the football. That's different, though. I'm saying that as they viewed him as a one or a two. I don't know how they view him as a three or a four. And while Tannehill's not looking his way, Levis can look his way. It's just a different different direction with the offense. He should be flourishing now, especially with Hopkins and Ridley ahead of him. This dude should blossom this year, but it's more on him now, given the structure of what they've done at the position.
Yeah, you're right. It's going to be, solely up to him. And I
Mace,
don't, I don't.
Mace.
When, yeah, go ahead.
Behind the scenes, in your locker room, Baltimore, or when you're here, what are you telling a guy like that, a young player, you're a vet like you were?
I'm pulling him aside and telling him, like, dude, you got to figure this out. Like, you have all the – I will build him up as much as I possibly can. You have all the potential. But I will be honest with him. Like, listen, if you don't go out there and show it, your ass ain't going to be here. I'll be serious with him. Listen, you have more potential than I do as a player. But if you're not, working on that, and if you're not making do on that, they're going to cut you because they've given you 3 years. That's how honest I would be with them.
I mean, honestly, like today, if the season started today, would Nick Westbrook-Ikhine be wide receiver 3 over Treylon Burks?
I wouldn't put him wide receiver 3. I like Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. I do. But I wouldn't put him because of
making
again,
the assumption that T-Hop and Calvin Ridley
exactly making the assumption those two are one and two. Anything can happen during training camp. They could elevate one guy, whatnot. But I've seen enough in Traylon that I know he can do it. But me believing he can do it and him actually doing it consistently, Hutt, that's a different story. You know,
and he's got to be available.
Yeah,
be available.
He has to be available. Now, with that being said, what they did from a secondary standpoint, they go get Chidobe, and then they go get Ladarius Sneed. They still need depth at that position.
Yes.
You draft your guard. I mean, you draft your tackle first round. Should they double back and draft in the second round, you believe, a corner, even though they did go out and pay money for two corners? Should they go the corner route or should they go the defensive line route? I'm not even thinking about wide receiver, honestly. I'm not. Not in the second round.
Okay. Not high? Yeah, because are you saying just because you can get production elsewhere?
Yeah, I think you can get the production. And I think you have three guys on your roster. Well, really four with Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. They're all veteran guys. They all do something a little bit different. Now, you're just waiting on that one guy to really kick it in the gear, and we all know who that one guy is. But other than that, I go get a receiver in the fourth round, but I'm not spending a first or second round pick on a receiver this year.
What are you doing at tight end, too, is another question I would have for depth. But, like, hey, I think they're going to load up at corner.
Mm-hmm.
But safety, too. They need another caliber safety next to Hooker. So, there are still pieces that you can have a not even necessarily plug and play. You can actually draft some development players with these coaches that are supposedly known for doing that. But just the background of what they did at offensive line coaching wise, and knowing what they've done coaching wise in the secondary with their defensive coordinator too. Just you can kind of see where the priorities are going to be, and corner is still going to be one of those, given what they've done this offseason, but also. You know, McCreary can play inside, which is where they want him to play. And you have big length. You have length on the outside at corner, physical guys at the line of scrimmage, and a quick passing game league. Now, it's imperative that you go. Autry's a big loss because to get to the quarterback fast, in a quick snap, pop, and pass league. Now, you want the physical corner with the receiver. And you want pass rush from the inside because on the outside pass rush, it's getting harder and harder to actually get to the quarterback in time. So with Simmons and then losing Autry and what the piece that he was, he's one of those players that no one ever thinks of or talks about. He views as a role player, but the role is so big for this league now. And that's why you're seeing defensive tackles get paid. There's money invested in that spot now because that's how you can affect a quarterback in that center and guard mix that you're attacking. They've got to do something there because it's not just Jeffrey Simmons and everyone else. It was Jeffrey Simmons and Danico Autry, and they don't have that number. They don't have that that production in one player currently. That's a huge piece that I think they have to put pretty high on the priority list. Can I ask Mace one question, Caroline?
Go ahead.
Derek, does the kickoff rule piss you off being a special team player and a return guy? We're going to see. Think about the names over the years that have made names for themselves in the return game or being like the special teams guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that job is going away. It's almost evaporated. I don't know if we'll see a kickoff in 2 or 3 years, honestly. What are players saying, and what does it mean for guys that made a name for themselves early in their career as the special team returner that then became the veteran wide receiver, for instance?
Me being old school, I understand why they are doing it. I really do.
Lawsuits and stuff?
Yeah, lawsuits. I don't even really think it's about the lawsuits. They know they got a lot of money tied up in these players, whether you're a special teams player or not. And they're trying to limit, the concussions. They're trying to limit the injuries, especially on plays like that. I think if they could take it away altogether, they would. But then that would mean a lot of people out of jobs. A lot of players.
Yeah, do we have Devin Hester's anymore?
No, because of the way that the rule, even before they changed it to what it's going to be now, there still was rule changes in regards to kickoff. But here's what's going to make it interesting. As I read more about the rule, it's going to be we're going to see more kickoffs return. Now, whether they're returned for touchdowns is a different story. But we're going to see more kickoffs return. Why? Because there's a piece in that rule that states that if you don't hit it in that drop zone, if you kick it over the drop zone, like kicking the back of the end zone, then the team gets to start the ball, I think, at the 30 or 35.
But, 35, I think, and then it's the 30 on a fair catch or something.
But if you kick it within that kick zone, then, you know, more than likely you kick it high. What they're trying to incentivize, I think, here is they're trying to lessen the concussions but still bring a little excitement to the kick return, because I do believe you're going to see more balls return because they just can't kick them out the back of the end zone anymore. Because if you kick it out the back of the end zone, I think you start on them 35, somewhere around there. It's no longer the 25. So you're going to be giving up 10 yards if you kick it out the back of the end zone. You're going to see teams doing more like high kicks, trying to get a fair catch. You're not going to see as many kicks going out the back of the end zone, I believe, because of the way the rules has changed. But are we going to see more kickoff returns for touchdown? I don't think we are. Those days of Devin Hester, you know, Mitchell, Mail Farr, Cordell Patterson, myself, who else? Just name really good kickoff returners that have played in this league.
Cribbs.
Yeah, Josh Cribbs. Those days are going to be gone. I mean, I forget the kid we had here some years ago. Why am I forgetting his name, receiver?
Mariani.
Yeah, Mariani. Mark Mariani. The days of seeing guys like that, they're gone.
Do they make rosters anymore?
I think it's going to be hard, but now you're going to have to do – you're going to have to be a little bit more valuable to the team with your original position now. Mm-hmm. Like if you're a running back, you need to –
You're a running back. You're not a specialist.
Exactly. You're not a specialist.
If you're the third running back, you're a teamer if you're active.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so you're going to start seeing bigger roles from these guys now.
On the note of rule changes, quickly, before we let you go, your thoughts on the hip drop tackle rule change?
I hate it. It's going to – teams – there will be games that will be lost based on this rule.
Oh, yeah.
Not because of a flag. It's going to be because a dude doesn't tackle someone
for fear of
a penalty or a fine. Mm-hmm. They will not tackle someone. And that will be the difference in a ball game. And that guy will be viewed as the guy who didn't try. That's how I'm viewing it. Because the hip drop, I mean, at some point, these guys are not trying to hurt the other player. They're trying to do their job and tackle football. Trying to get him to the ground. Now, there's a very specific way they're going to penalize. You know, your body's off the ground and you're like using your weight to pull him down. I don't know if that's going to be penalized every single time, but it will be. It'll be fined. Guys will be on a Friday. They'll get a fine in their locker, and guys are defensive players learned how to play corner when the rules were against them. They learned how to tackle in a different way instead of the helmet to helmet. They've evolved to the rules. They'll do this too, but Mark Andrews, Tyreek Hill last year, both injured on plays like this. And now they're trying to make sure that guys don't even attempt to tackle like that. When at times, there are times where that's the only thing you can do, especially if you're coming from the side, mm-hmm. side to side. The flag, the 15-yard penalty will affect it. At the same time, the guy that doesn't go for the tackle, he's going to be viewed as the guy that didn't give much effort. And I hate that.
I don't like it either. I'm all for making the game safer, but also, like, we need to have a game. We need to be able to play the game of football.
They reviewed, they said 20 or 30,000 plays like this.
Jeez.
And they determined that the chance of injury was 20 to 30% higher on tackles like that. Now, I can see where that would be. We have disability, body weight and all that. But, I mean, yeah, this is tackle football.
Yeah.
This is not a head injury. So I view this real different than I do the helmet to helmet and, you know, keeping the head up and all the stuff like that. This is not targeting. I don't like this compared to the targeting rule, which I understand. I need the whole injury thing. This is football. Guys are going to get hurt. It's just part of the sport. And it's not like you could just play flag unless you want to play flag. Mm-hmm. And that is an Olympic sport.
As it should be.
Yeah.
Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mic with Hutton Withrow. Hutt, appreciate you for stopping by. Always appreciate your time and your insight. We'll catch up with you next Wednesday.
Yep. Appreciate it. Have a great rest of the week, guys.
Thanks a lot, Hutt.
You as well.